Voice of America in Washington. This is VOA Global. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson.
I'm Ira Melman. Coming up on today's program, consternation in this country over Sony's decision to halt the release of a controversial motion picture.
The movie Interstellar wasn't hacked, but some of the critics think maybe it should have been. Ray Kugel looks at it.
On China Focus, concern from the United States and the Philippines over some new satellite imagery of a Chinese land reclamation project in disputed waters off the South China Sea.
President Obama signs into law legislation passed by the U.S. Congress authorizing more sanctions on Russia for its role in the Ukraine crisis.
In the American Cafe, problems at the U.S. port that handles most of the cargo traffic between the U.S. and Asia.
That and so much more coming your way today on VOA Global. And welcome to Daybreak Asia, our summary of Asian news and events for Friday, December 19th. I'm Jim Stevenson. In brief today, media reports say U.S. authorities have linked last month's crippling cyber attack against Sony Pictures Entertainment to North Korea. The attack was made to pressure the studio into canceling the release of a film that parodies North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. VOA's Brian Padden reports from Seoul that the incident is familiar to companies in South Korea, which have a history of being targeted by the North.
Simon Choi, a cybersecurity researcher at an antivirus company in Seoul called Hayuri Incorporated, studied the malware codes used to hack into the Sony Corporation's computer system. He says these codes are similar to the ones used in a cyber attack on South Korean media companies in 2012. He says they confirmed that the malware used in the past was from an IP address from North Korea, and the malware found in the Sony Pictures case is the same. So he thinks the Sony Pictures case is related to North Korea. Other security analysts have described the attack as state-sponsored, and several sources said that North Korea was the government involved. A U.S. government official cited in media reports said that Washington has come to the same conclusion but is hesitant to officially accuse North Korea of launching a cyber terrorism attack. The attack on Sony exposed tens of thousands of sensitive documents. The perpetrators have also threatened to release more unless Sony canceled the planned release of the movie The Interview, a dark comedy about the assassination of Kim Jong-un. The studio and distributors gave in to the demand after the hackers, who call themselves the Guardians of Peace, appeared to threaten physical attacks on the theaters that show the movie. The North Korean government denied involvement in the cyber attack on Sony, but called it a righteous deed and concedes that it may have been done by North Korea supporters. Earlier this year, Pyongyang called the movie itself an act of war. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
President Obama has called the cyber attack on Sony Pictures last month very serious. VOA's Victor Beatty has more on the U.S. government's investigation on the cyber attack that resulted in the leak of sensitive documents and emails.
Appearing late Wednesday on ABC News, Mr. Obama said an investigation into the hacking effort is underway.
The cyber attack is very serious. We're investigating it. We're taking it seriously. You know, we'll be vigilant. If we see something that we think is serious and credible, then we'll alert the public. But for now, my recommendation would be that people go to the movies.
Media reports cite a government official speaking on condition of anonymity as saying federal investigators have connected the hacking of Sony Pictures Entertainment to North Korea, which earlier denied any responsibility. Eric Gardner, senior editor of The Hollywood Reporter, calls the Sony hacking unprecedented in scale.
There have been things that have made Hollywood studios change distribution of movies, but nothing like an attack that may come from a nation state forcing its hand on a movie that is really just a comedy. This is almost unimaginable, but certainly it's a tough situation for them. The hack attack has put a lot of attention on this film. You know, there have been some people who have speculated, maybe jokingly, that this was all just a publicity stunt. But really, no matter how much money the film makes from here on out, it will have not been worth it to Sony. I mean, this has been, absolutely terrible for them.
The movie's budget is about $40 million and by one estimate could have made up to $100 million for the Hollywood studio. RAND Corporation North Korea analyst Bruce Bennett says Sony's decision to cancel the film's release sets a potentially bad precedent.
If foreigners who want to stop the release of a film can now follow the example of these hackers, that's dangerous for the United States.
And Bennett says it's good news for North Korea's leaders.
They don't want this film to get out. They in particular don't want it to get on DVD and get circulated into North Korea, which a lot of outside DVDs do, because of the way it depicts Kim Jong-un fairly accurately as being ruthless and deceptive and just in ways that don't coincide with the regime's propaganda.
Actor Rob Lowe, who was part of the cast of The Interview, tweeted that everyone caved. The hackers won in utter and complete victory for them. Hollywood has done Neville Chamberlain proud. An apparent reference to the British Prime Minister who sought to appease Nazi leader Adolf Hitler before World War II. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Russia's plunging currency is creating some serious concerns for Thailand's multi-billion dollar tourism industry. It has already been suffering for the past year because of political upheaval that culminated in the May 22nd bloodless military coup. VOA correspondent Steve Herman joins us with more details from Bangkok.
With the ruble crashing to record lows against the U.S. dollar and other currencies, Russians are cutting back on spending, including overseas travel. That cutback is being felt in places like the beach resort city of Pattaya on the east coast of the Gulf of Thailand. According to the Thai Hotel Association, the loss of the Russians, who are known as big spenders, has resulted in a 70% drop in hotel reservations from Russia during the upcoming high season. Sulada Sarutilavan, director of the Pattaya Office of the Tourism Association of Thailand, tells VOA News the Russians are second to none for the beach resort known for its licentious nightlife.
Actually, it's a major or main market for Pattaya. Last year, we got around 1.7 million Russian tourists to Pattaya.
The number of Russian visitors to all of Thailand totaled 1.4 million through November of this year. But December is shaping up to be a disaster, and the National Hotel Operators Association expects a drop of 50% for the total number of Russian tourists for 2014 compared to last year. Sulada of the Tourism Association says popular destinations such as Pattaya, Phuket, and Samui, all heavily reliant on visitors converting Russian rubles into Thai baht, are expecting things to stay bad for the next 6 months at least.
Naturally, we are worried about this because we don't know when it's going to end. For the tour operator and hoteliers who are dealing with the Russian market, they are quite worried about this.
The Thai resort cities and islands dependent on the Russians are putting into place urgent marketing initiatives to make up for the shortfalls by luring short-haul visitors from China and ASEAN region nations. In recent years, the Russian market has been the third largest source of tourists for Thailand. As for those still yearning for an affordable warm escape from the long, cold Russian winter, they are said to be shifting vacation plans to Vietnam and Myanmar. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Daybreak Asia comes to you every weekday on VOA Global. You may subscribe to it as a podcast for free at voanews.com.
You are listening to the Voice of America from Washington, along with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. You have been talking about some of the things we're reporting about, and the big story today, at least perhaps the big story of the day, after major American theater chains decided not to run a new Hollywood comedy about a U.S. plot to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, its financial backers, Sony Pictures Entertainment, decided not to release the movie. Ra Hatu from New Zealand wrote, "No one is infallible and no one is immune from criticism or satire. freedom of speech allows filmmakers and comics to mock the president of the U.S. or anyone else. The very fact that the North Korean robots take it so seriously only makes the farce more laughable. The fools have only succeeded in drawing far more worldwide attention to the very film which is the subject of their fear and loathing, pouring from the empty into the void.
Everything in moderation, writes. It's a shame that, in effect, America has given in to a terrorist threat. It was not our government, but American business, and this sets a precedent that other terrorists can actually frighten us successfully.
Bear from Eugene, Oregon, writes, and yet these same movie houses had no problem running a movie depicting President Bush being assassinated. When you pull this new movie, you kill freedom and bow to despot scum, is what he wrote.
And ST tells us this is sickening. We're actually letting a dictator from another country strip us of our First Amendment right. Does anyone really care anymore?
And Marcus Aurelius from New Jersey says...
The second, that is.
That's right, the second. Says, Sony's best response, listen to this, would be to make it available for free on the Internet. Let it go viral around the world on an ever-increasing number of sites. North Korea will have to keep busy hunting down and blocking.
We're viral on the Internet around the world. You can write to us, voaasia at voanews.com.
Take medicine for that.
This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. Coming up, we're going to have Ray Kugel's look at the movie Interstellar.
I wanted to see that. I haven't gotten to see it yet, but I love science fiction stuff, and this apparently has some sociological stuff about it that makes it worthwhile. And coming up later in the program, we will check international news, a lot of major news happening around the world. Stay with us.
I'm Ray Kugel with the Hollywood Beat. What's new at the movies? A new science fiction blockbuster tells the tale of big trouble for Mother Earth and the heroic efforts to find a way out, literally.
What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to give it something socially responsible to do.
Can't we just let it go?
This thing needs to learn how to adapt, Murph.
Okay, let's mask up.
Like the rest of us.
In the movie called Interstellar, a group of space explorers must try to save the planet, ripped apart by drought and famine. They have to go far beyond our solar system, through a wormhole, which is a kind of break in the space-time continuum, to find a planet that can support human life. The secret mission to the unknown is headed by Cooper, a widowed engineer and test pilot turned astronaut, played by Matthew McConaughey, who must leave his family behind, including a 10-year-old daughter, perhaps forever. McConaughey, who must wear a spacesuit, not allowing him to show his famous pecs, is helped along by Anne Hathaway, who doesn't sing. She is an astrophysicist named Amelia. She is the daughter of Professor Brand, who came up with the idea for the trip in the first place, and played by veteran English actor Michael Caine.
Your daughter's generation will be the last to survive on Earth. You're the best pilot we ever had.
Sir Michael either needs the work or likes to work. I think he's just plain old school and enjoys showing up. The 2-year journey through the wormhole takes time travel to another level, where 1 hour equals 7 years back on Earth. The math computes, because it gives actress Jessica Chastain the chance to play McConaughey's daughter grown up.
By our solar system,
to our galaxy.
Here we go.
Here. We want to get down fast, don't we?
Actually, we want to get there in one piece.
Hang on. We have a mission. Our mission does not work if the people on Earth are dead by the time we pull it off.
Interstellar is a $165 million spectacular directed by Christopher Nolan, who also co-wrote the film with his brother. Nolan says it's more than just action, but also filled with mystery, suspense, and an emotional love story.
I want to make a mind-blowing science fiction film that has heart, that has emotion, that has relatable human characters. I want to try and, you know, combine the intimate scale of human interaction and the connections between us and exploration of that with the vastness of the universe and try and, you know, put these two things together. I saw that as a fascinating combination and a great challenge for me as a filmmaker.
Matthew McConaughey, coming off a Best Actor Oscar last year, gets a chance in this role to try saving the world.
There are many things I could say. I would say that the expectations of mankind must be about more than ourselves. And that the further out there that we explore, the more things out there that are unknown that we discover, we actually see that it reciprocates, comes right back and revolves back to each of us, you and me. It becomes extremely more personal. The further out there we go, the more personal it actually is, and the more personal responsibility we actually have for where we go.
Yeah, right. I guess so. Anne Hathaway, another former Oscar winner, may say it a bit easier.
This is a sci-fi movie, and it is an intimate family drama, and it is action-adventure. And it's completely all these things, but it's also itself.
Then again, maybe not. But what is clear is that Interstellar is a movie filled with technical achievement and a visual stunner. With a running time of almost 3 hours, you should get your money's worth, especially when it comes to seeing such high-priced talent possibly get lost in space, even if it's not permanent. The Hollywood Beat goes on at voanews.com. I'm Ray Kugel.
We'll find a way. We always have.
I'm Sarah Williams with China Focus. New satellite imagery of a Chinese land reclamation project in disputed waters of the South China Sea is drawing new concern from the United States and the Philippines. From Manila, Simone Orendine reports.
Chinese land reclamation projects in the South China Sea have been ongoing for years, but new satellite imagery of Fiery Cross Reef appears to show that China's massive construction on the island will eventually mean it could support an airstrip. The Philippines said the construction in an area of the South China Sea that Manila claims as its own raises tensions and is a reminder of the need to pass a long-anticipated code of conduct in the South China Sea. The code is a proposed legal agreement among the 10-member Southeast Asian nations, or ASEAN, and China on how to peacefully handle disputes on competing claims in the South China Sea. Department spokesman Charles Jose says the Chinese construction points to the need for ASEAN to pass guidelines on maintaining the status quo in the disputed region.
Of course, for us, it's something that raises tension in the area. And of course, we would like to de-escalate tension, and we would like to manage tension in the area. And that's the reason why we are working with ASEAN and China.
The defense and security analyst publication IHS Jane's Defense Weekly released satellite images taken on November 14th of ongoing reclamation work at Fiery Cross, which is in the heart of the disputed sea. Apart from the Philippines and China, Brunei, Malaysia, Taiwan, and Vietnam all have claims in the Spratt lease and the wider South China Sea. The sea, which China claims almost entirely, is rich in marine life, potentially huge gas and oil reserves, and is a heavily traveled trade route. The Jane's report says China is building what could be an airstrip and apron on the length of the newly reshaped Fiery Cross. It also says the now 3,000-meter-long and more than 200-meter-wide island appears to have a harbor big enough for military craft. With the release of the report, a U.S. military spokesman called on China to stop reclamation work and instead work toward a diplomatic approach to restraining such activity. Major General Luo Yuan with China's People's Liberation Army called the criticism irresponsible in an interview with a state-run newspaper, saying the U.S. is obviously biased, considering that the Philippines, Malaysia, Vietnam have already set up military facilities. Ramel Banlawi with the Manila-based Philippine Institute for Peace, Violence, and Terrorism Research says Fiery Cross Reef is at the epicenter of the Spratt lease, and its location is very strategic.
So if China decides to construct an airstrip in the area for military purposes, it can check Vietnamese, Malaysian, and Philippine activities, or even all activities of the claimants in the area.
An editorial in China's state-backed Global Times newspaper said the island showcases China's prominent construction capabilities And the Philippines and Vietnam should get used to China's island construction in the South China Sea. Wu Shikun is president of National Institute for South China Sea Studies in Hainan Island. He says the main function of the current expansion at Fiery Cross is to improve working and living conditions for the small Chinese population that lives around there. But Wu says in 3 to 5 years, an airstrip there could have a military purpose because China is leery of a recently signed agreement between the U.S. and the Philippines to have American military hardware pre-positioned here.
China feels strategic pressure from neighboring countries and U.S. allies, particularly the Philippines. So China should have such capabilities to protect its sovereignty, sovereign rights.
A Philippine court found 9 Chinese fishermen guilty of poaching and catching an endangered species in the South China Sea. The group was apprehended in May when police found more than 500 sea turtles on their boat in the disputed Spratly Islands. China has called their detention a provocation since Beijing claims the fishermen were in Chinese territorial waters. Simone Orendine for VOA News, Manila.
Follow us on Weibo. That's China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams.
It's time for Asia Business News from the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Asian stock markets powered higher Thursday, sweeping aside worries about a flagging global economy after the U.S. Federal Reserve said it would like to remain patient in its approach to raising interest rates. Japan's Nikkei 225 surged 2.5% to 17,242. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong added 1.1%, closing at 22,828. Australia's S&P ASX 200 rose 1.1% to 52.22. Markets in Taiwan and Southeast Asia also gained. The Shanghai Composite in China added 0.1%. It stands at 30.63, and Seoul's Kospi was down 0.1% at 18.98.
BYD is a Chinese car company that's backed by Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. It plunged without explanation by as much as 47% Thursday, losing more than $1 billion in market value for the day. Ooh. BYD is based in the southern city of Shenzhen and makes electric vehicles, batteries, and mobile phone handsets. It said it could not explain the sudden decrease, which coincided with surging trading volumes in its stock. In an announcement to the Hong Kong Stock Exchange Thursday afternoon, BYD said it was not aware of any reasons for the price or volume movements or of any information which must be announced to avoid false market in the company's securities or any inside information that needs to be disclosed.
Mystery. McDonald's in Japan is limiting the serving size of its fries as stocks run short due to labor disruptions on the U.S. West Coast. McDonald's began rationing its French fries Wednesday morning. It said prolonged labor negotiations with port workers on the West Coast have made it difficult to meet the demand despite an emergency airlift of 1,000 tons of the potatoes from the U.S. by sea. That's business news.
This is Today in History. On December 19, 1777, during the American Revolutionary War, General George Washington led an army of about 11,000 men to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, to camp there for the winter. The conditions were severe, and disease took hundreds of lives. In 1907, 239 miners were killed in a coal mine explosion at Jacobs Creek, a town in western Pennsylvania. In 1932, the BBC World Service began broadcasting as the BBC Empire Service. In 1941, German dictator Adolf Hitler became the Supreme Commander-in-Chief of the German Army. In 1946, forces of Vietnam's communist leader Ho Chi Minh attacked French colonial forces in Hanoi. That attack is seen as the opening salvo of a war in which the French would lose their Southeast Asia territory. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
From the Voice of America, with Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman on VOA Global. McDonald's, as we have told you, is limiting the size of its portions of French fried potatoes in Japan. And the reason for that is that they can't get enough of them.
I guess you can't tell them to supersize then.
No, I guess
downsize. I like downsized fries, please.
Did you know that the Japanese, get this, consume more than 300,000 tons of French fries a year, mostly at fast food restaurants, largely sourced from imports of frozen processed potatoes from the United States. Shipments in December are expected to be just over half the normal level, according to Japanese newspapers. And we'll discuss the reason for that coming up on American Cafe here on the Voice of America.
Well, as you were going to say, we got a full-size shipment of the latest world news. Steve Norman's next.
Glad you said that.
And coming up, Russia's economic woes, top Islamic State leaders killed in airstrikes, plus a deadly year for migrants. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Russian President Vladimir Putin said Thursday he is confident the country's struggling economy will rebound. Probably he'll do it within a couple of years, he says, with the ruble, and that they will stabilize the currency. The dramatic fall in value has been significant in the last few days, but offered no remedies for all of this. At a three-hour end-of-the-year news conference, Mr. Putin said central bank and economic officials are making suitable and correct decisions, his words, to stabilize the value of the currency, even as the country's economic heads are saying, well, they're just not quite sure, maybe a recession next year. He predicts better times ahead for Russia, just not immediately, even if world oil prices remain low or fall more, cutting deeper into the revenues for Moscow's key export. Mr. Putin said Russia's economy will inevitably adapt to the lower energy prices, and then he said inevitably they will be going up again at some point with the global economic growth and rising energy demand on the increase. Mr. Putin said Russia's currency reserves are sufficient to stabilize the Russian economy, but the ruble edged lower against the dollar after Mr. Putin's news conference on Thursday, trading at about 61 to the dollar. Meanwhile, the European Union imposed new sanctions against Crimea on Thursday, which Moscow said were absolutely unacceptable. That story from Lisa Bryant.
The new EU measures will ban all investment and restrict trade in Crimea, and even ban EU cruise ships from visiting Crimean ports. They are just the latest in a series of punitive measures enacted by Europe and the United States this year over the crisis in Ukraine. Before the meeting, the new EU president, former Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk, said the summit should send a strong signal of Europe's support for Ukraine, including financial support.
For sure. We will not find a long-term solution for Ukraine without adequate and consistent, both tough and responsible, strategy towards Russia. For me, it's clear that modern, stable, independent Ukraine will be and must be foundation of this new strategy.
Russia expert Kadri Leek, a senior policy fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations in London, said sanctions are only one element of a larger strategy needed to change the behavior of Russia and of its president, Vladimir Putin.
The chief question still is to take the sanctions tool and craft it into a tool for policy. Because right now, we have sanctions that are working, but we don't really have meaningful strategy behind them.
She says that strategy should not only include ensuring Russia respects the Minsk ceasefire agreement with Ukraine, but deal more broadly with Russia's effort to carve out a sphere of influence at the expense of its neighbors. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And here in Washington, President Obama signed into law legislation passed by the U.S. Congress authorizing more sanctions on Russia for its role in the Ukraine crisis. Mr. Obama said in his statement Thursday that his administration's sanction policies regarding Russia's actions in Ukraine has been carefully calibrated, as he put it, in accordance with developments on the ground and coordinated with, as he also put it, our allies and our partners. U.S. military officials say more than 1,300 airstrikes and a stronger Iraqi security force is having a significant effect on the ability of the Islamic State group to operate in Iraq. VOA's Jeff Seldon has more. It is Seldon, actually, from the Pentagon.
U.S. and coalition airstrikes that began in August are leaving a mark on the Islamic State's leadership. According to a senior defense official, in just the last month or so, taking out the group's number two official in Iraq, its military emir in Iraq, and the emir of Mosul. The announcement followed an optimistic assessment by the commander of the Combined Joint Task Force for the operation known as Inherent Resolve.
Daesh has been halted and transitioning to the defense and is attempting to hold what they currently have.
Referring to the Islamic State by its Arabic acronym, U.S. Lieutenant General James Terry says airstrikes clearly have taken a toll.
They're having a hard time in terms of communicating right now, in terms of resupply.
He says that's hurting the Islamic State's ability to push out propaganda, recruit new fighters, and even spread fear. Jeff Selden, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Local residents and officials in northeastern Nigeria say suspected members of the Boko Haram militant group have killed at least 32 people and kidnapped more than 100 others in a raid on the village of Gumsuri. The attack took place on Sunday, according to residents who fled to the city of Maiduguri, the capital of Borno. News of the attack took several days to emerge because the area's mobile phone network was damaged in earlier attacks. International Organization for Migration reports 2014 is the deadliest year on record for migrants who are fleeing conflict, political persecution, and economic hardship. Lisa Schlein reports.
The International Organization for Migration reports some 5,000 people have lost their lives fleeing across seas, remote deserts, or mountains. Most of these deaths, two-thirds, have occurred in the Mediterranean. IOM says more than 3,000 people have drowned while crossing the Mediterranean Sea in flimsy smugglers' boats trying to reach Europe. It says most of those risking their lives are Syrians and Palestinians fleeing conflict and migrants from the Horn of Africa desperate to escape fighting, oppression, and poverty. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
White House says U.S. officials are treating a cyber attack on the Sony Pictures Corporation as a serious national security matter and that President Obama's National Security Council is considering a proportionate response. White House spokesman Josh Earnest says evidence shows the attack against Sony Pictures was carried out by a sophisticated actor, but Earnest declined to blame North Korea, saying the investigation is still progressing. Massive breach at Sony has resulted in the leak of tens of thousands of documents and has escalated to threats of terror attacks over the film The Interview, which is about a fictional plot to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. United States says it's possible that Cuban President Raul Castro could come one day to the White House and sit down with President Obama. Wednesday, when the two leaders announced their country's plan to normalize relations after a half-century diplomatic split, the White House spokesman said it was also possible that Mr. Obama could visit Havana as the two countries open embassies in their respective capitals. Dramatic easing of tensions between both the U.S. and Cuba, however, have not erased all tension. There are people who say it should never have happened. Those are some of the stories making news. Find out more right here at voanews.com.
This is Business News on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. The U.S. stock market surged Thursday with the main indices recording their best one-day gains in years as investors continued to cheer the Federal Reserve's accommodative approach to monetary policy. The Dow Jones Industrial Average soared 421 points or 2.4% to close at 17,778. It was the first time in more than 6 years that the Dow recorded two consecutive days of gain exceeding 200 points. The S&P 500 jumped 48.34 points or 2.4% to close at 2061, its biggest one-day gain in nearly 2 years. The NASDAQ composite ended the day with a gain of 104 points, up about 2.2%. It's at 47.48.
Well, the Fed's words yesterday was not the only input to a positive day. The number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits unexpectedly fell last week, suggesting the labor market continues to strengthen in the United States. The Labor Department here said initial claims for state unemployment benefits declined by 6,000 to a seasonally adjusted 289,000 for the weekend. ended December 13th, and that did defy Wall Street's expectations for a rise to 295,000.
An index designed to predict the future health of the economy posted a third straight solid gain in November. Conference board economists say the widespread gains in the leading index are pointing to strong underlying conditions in the U.S. economy that should propel growth through the winter.
Well, after Sony canceled the release of The Interview, which depicts the hapless assassination of the North Korean leader, a Dallas chain of movie theater originally said they would play Team America World Police, which lampoons Kim Jong-il. However, they've now pulled that as well. That's a look at business news on The Voice of America.
This is VOA Global. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. Coming up, David Byrd and Now. What's happening now?
David is afraid of dentists.
Oh.
I mean, that will be made clear.
He drills into the subject.
Yes, that he does. But there are some new scientific and medical devices that will allow you to get to the dentist office with a little less pain. That follows American Cafe on VOA. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. The Los Angeles and Long Beach Port Complex in Southern California is the main gateway for trade between the United States and Asia. $1 billion in trade goes through that twin port every day, but much of that cargo is being delayed by what some describe as a massive congestion problem during the holiday shopping season. Elizabeth Lee visited the port and joins us now in the American Cafe.
The Christmas season is supposed to be the best time of year for Liang Liang's wholesale business if he actually has merchandise for his customers.
My customers are asking for the merchandise, but I can't get the cargo. I feel very helpless.
Liang is still waiting for cargo that arrived at the port at the start of the month. It usually takes 2 days to a week to get it. Now he has no idea when it will arrive. Long Beach port officials say there are several reasons for the congestion problem at the busiest container port complex in the U.S. Here's one of them, the wheeled frames or chassis that hold the containers. The port's Lee Peterson says the chassis haven't been where they need to be for trucks to move the containers.
Up until the last couple of years, the chassis were owned by the shipping companies. But in recent years, the shipping companies have decided not to own those chassis. So now those are owned by fleets who are still kind of working on their system for supplying those chassis to the truckers and the terminals as they're needed.
Another problem, container ships are bigger, up to 50% larger than those of a few years ago. But there are fewer truck drivers to haul away the larger number of containers, says Craig Merrilies of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union.
The conditions are so bad, the pay is so low, and the problems are so serious for these workers that they're quitting.
There are also charges. The situation is affected by contract negotiations between the association that represents shipping companies and the Port Workers Union. The Pacific Maritime Association, which represents the shipping lines, declined an on-camera interview, but in a statement said the union has refused to dispatch hundreds of skilled workers to the port, causing a slowdown when congestion is already a problem. The union disputes the charge.
Those exaggerations and distortions try and point the finger at the union, when in fact the industry and employers have been responsible for massive congestion problems.
Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
San Francisco is a major stop for Chinese visitors, and an agreement between China and the United States announced in Beijing last month promises to draw even more Chinese tourists to U.S. destinations. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan spent a day in San Francisco, California, with some visitors from China to learn why they're coming.
Major West Coast cities are must-see destinations for Chinese tour groups, which take in sites that include San Francisco's iconic Golden Gate Bridge. Li Hong, who was here with her daughter, is impressed.
It's beautiful.
She says this is her first time in the U.S. It's pretty, and unlike China, she says, where pollution is a problem in the major cities. Here she sees blue skies and white clouds. She says her first impression is good. Tourism from China is expected to grow since the announcement in early November that both countries will extend their multiple entry business and tourist visas from the current 1 year to a maximum of 10 years. Harry Chen of San Francisco-based Joy Holiday takes Asian tours to U.S. cities and scenic sites, including national parks. He says the visa change will help the economies of both countries.
And also, I think it's the great way to get two cultures to learn from each other, to build friendship, understanding.
It's part of San Francisco's story and America's story, which more and more visitors from China are experiencing. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, San Francisco.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe, where you can join us every day at voanews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Are you like me? You don't really like going to the dentist. And if you need a crown or other dental replacements, the visits can be long and time-consuming. Well, VOA's George Pootage has some good news. Technology is now helping dentists make replacement teeth faster and more customized.
Computer-aided medical instruments are increasingly making life easier for doctors and their patients. It used to be that a common but complicated procedure to get a tooth crown required several visits to the dentist's office, while a dental technician was preparing the permanent replacement for a damaged tooth, the patient had to wear a temporary crown. Since mid-1980s, this procedure is gradually being taken over by robotic machines that reduce the job to just over 2 hours. Sitting in the dentist's chair takes even less time.
It's about 12 minutes worth of chair time for the patient. The rest of the time, it's work that's taking place outside the patient's mouth.
At his dental office in Northern Virginia, close to Washington, Michael Silvius and his assistant prepare a patient's tooth for a new crown. The actual drilling takes about 5 minutes. Instead of making the impression of the damaged tooth in a plastic material, Silvius uses a wand with a video camera to scan the tooth and the surrounding area. At this point, the computer takes over, designing the new crown and creating instructions for a robotic milling machine. A porcelain cube, no larger than the tooth, is inserted between two precise drills, similar to the dentist's drill, that grind away excess material, turning the cube into a perfectly matching tooth crown. To harden, the crown must be baked at high temperature for about 10 minutes. During that process, it also gets tinted to match the color of the neighboring teeth, so it is ready to be cemented in the patient's mouth. Patients are pleased with the result.
It feels amazing. The tooth feels like my tooth.
Dr. Silvia says even this technology may someday become obsolete.
The other thing you really look forward to is genetic engineering and eventually cloning so that you can make the crown out of actually enamel, just like the patient's natural teeth are.
But for now, he says, his patients are happy to be able to get a new crown in just one visit. George Pootage, VOA News, Washington.
In other health news, a new study in Britain says breastfeeding babies longer is better for the children and their moms. The study by Britain's National Health Service and the Brunel University says moms who breastfeed their babies up to 18 months can help reduce the risk of childhood diseases and breast cancer. But new mom Jenny Galbraith told the Associated Press that feeding her newborn for that long could be a problem.
That would mean I'd still be breastfeeding when I went back to work. At the moment, I have to go back to work after 12 months. That would mean, I think, certainly expressing at work, storing milk at work, other things that I think at the moment most workplaces aren't really geared up. I think there would be a lot of stigma around me doing that.
Roberta Rubino is another new mom. She told the AP that most people accommodate breastfeeding in public, but there is still a social stigma to breastfeeding older babies.
I do think that people are quite accommodating to very young babies breastfeeding in public, but when they get a little bit older, I think people do think it's weird.
Rosie Dodds is a senior advisor for the charity NCT, which works to support parents and families in Britain. She told the AP that new moms need all the help they can get to raise healthy babies.
We know that most women want to breastfeed around 80% start, but also 80% of those who stop in the first 6 weeks would have liked to carry on for longer, and it's those women that we need to provide more support for.
According to the Archives of Disease in Childhood, if women could be encouraged to exclusively breastfeed for up to 4 months, it would save nearly $17 million a year in health care costs. Doubling the number of women who breastfeed for between 7 and 18 months would save more than $50 million in medical costs. So what do you think? Let us know your opinion on these stories or anything you hear on our program by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
This is the Voice of America, VOA Global, from Washington, D.C., from the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. We have a VOA calendar. We have boxes of them, and yes, we're ready to stick more of them in the mail.
And their current calendars, too, for the 2015 year.
That's
upcoming.
A good thing.
Yes. Right for yours if you want one. VOA Asia at voanews.com. Please include your full postal mailing address.
We think
we'll
the dates
send
are
you
right.
a calendar.
We think the dates are right.
This is Sports on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. A man who admitted working as a black market chemist at a garage lab in a suburban home pleaded guilty Thursday to being the main supplier of banned performance-enhancing substances in Major League Baseball's most recent steroid scandal. Paulo Baerchuk, a 51-year-old Brazilian citizen with permanent U.S. residency, pleaded guilty to conspiracy to distribute testosterone. Investigators said that he was the key source of the substance for Anthony Bosch, who ran the now-closed Biogenesis of America clinic that provided steroids to Major League Baseball players and other athletes. Baerchuk faces a reduced prison sentence of 2 to 3 years on February 25th. That's because he agreed to cooperate with prosecutors, but he could also be deported back to Brazil after prison.
Novak Djokovic and Serena Williams have been selected as the International Tennis Federation's world champions for 2014. Djokovic won the annual award for the fourth time. Williams claimed it for the fifth time. Djokovic won Wimbledon for his seventh Grand Slam title and reclaimed the number one ranking. Williams won the U.S. Open for the 18th major championship. That's amazing. And stayed number one throughout the year. Bob and Mike Bryan won the men's doubles award for the 11th time in 12 years.
Well, we know a lot of you follow the National Basketball Association, and in the league, the Memphis Grizzlies ended years of frustration in San Antonio and had to play late into the night to do it. Marc Gasol scored 26 points, including a banked-in three-pointer as regulation time expired. Memphis overcame blowing a 23-point lead for a 117-116 triple overtime victory over the Spurs Wednesday. The Grizzlies were seconds from defeat at the close of regulation and in the first and third overtimes, but they showed fortitude needed to snap a 10-game losing streak in San Antonio.
Elsewhere, Portland pulled away late to defeat Milwaukee. Atlanta cruised to a big win at Cleveland to extend its strong winning streak. And Toronto opened a 9-game lead in the Atlantic Division by beating their nearest rival, Brooklyn. That is a look at sports from the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on The Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're saluting the five most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending December 20th, 2014. For the first time since I don't know when, you'll hear more male voices than female in this week's show. It all starts in fifth place, where Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars jump three slots with Uptown Funk. Combining these two talents practically guaranteed a smash. I'll explain after the song.
Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk.
Mark Bronson and Bruno Mars climbed three notches to fifth place with Uptown Funk. It already hit number one in Australia, Scotland, and Mark's native United Kingdom. Mark Ronson has written and produced music for dozens of top acts, ranging from Adele to Lil Wayne. You know Bruno Mars is a multi-platinum singer, but don't forget, he started out writing and producing hits for other acts. Rebounding a slot to fourth place is another long-running hit machine, Maroon 5. Adam Levine may be heading for another championship on The Voice. I'll tell you more after Animals. Baby, I'm playing on you. Maroon 5 recovers a slot to number 4 with Animals. On Monday, lead singer Adam Levine proudly watched his three finalists perform on the U.S. edition of The Voice. The winner was to be announced on Tuesday. Either Adam or Blake Shelton will emerge as the winning coach. Adam has two series victories. Blake has three. Slipping a slot to third place is Meghan Trainor, who seems to have a famous fan. I'll have details after all about that bass.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, bass.
Meghan Trainor loses a slot in third place with her former champ All About That Bass. On December 12th, Meghan attended the Billboard Women in Music Gala in New York City. Also attending was Beyonce, who told Megan that she likes her song and likes to dance to it. Jumping a slot to second place is Hozier with Take Me to Church. This song just collected a year-end honor. Hold on for more.
Take me to church, I worship like a dog in the shrine of your light. I'll tell you my sins and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death, the good God, let me give you my life. Take me to church, I worship like a dog in the shrine of your life. I'll tell you my sins and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death, the good God, let me give you my life.
Hozier grabs the runner-up slot with his breakout hit, Take Me to Church. The streaming service Spotify has named it the most viral track of 2014. It's had more than 87 million streams while spending 48 weeks on Spotify's viral chart, indicating how many times it was shared. Taylor Swift shared photos from her 25th birthday party, and you'll probably know a few of the guests. I have details after Blank Space, holding at number one.
And I'll write your name.
Taylor Swift is your Hot 100 champ for a fourth week with Blank Space. Last weekend, Taylor shared some photos of her 25th birthday celebration. Among the attendees were Sam Smith, Justin Timberlake, Jay-Z, and Beyonce. That's a lot of platinum selling power in one place. We deal in gold and platinum here on the Hit List, so come back for more fun next week. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
Always fun to hear the Top 5 at the end of each week. Thank you, Ray. You know, we heard about a letter from a 9-year-old boy to the Chinese president advising him to lose some weight. Well, that, as you might expect, has been censored in China. The note was not sent directly to Xi Jinping, but posted online by the grade 4 pupil's father, who initially found it amusing. His son, New Zero, posted a popular nickname to address the president, roughly translated as Uncle Xi. He wrote, "Xi Dada, you could lose some weight."
Great.
You don't have to look as slim as Obama, but it's okay to look like Putin. I don't know if he meant with a shirt on or off.
Don't know. Or draping a coat around his wife, yeah. The letter was written as part of a homework assignment before it went viral on the internet after it was posted by his father, but it was later pulled from major news websites by censors. Direct references to the boy in the letter have also been removed from social media.
Well, I guess they didn't have time to get hacked on that one. Police say a suspect was caught by a whisker when DNA from his beard hair led to his arrest. The sheriff's deputies in upstate New York say an intruder armed with a knife had confronted a woman in her home in Vienna last December. The woman grabbed his beard before he fled. Then they had the hair sample. It was sent for DNA testing, and Oneida County deputies say it was linked to a 54-year-old Leon Tennant in October.
Yeah, got him by the hair of his chinny chin chin. That's going to wrap up our week. We hope you enjoy your weekend. Our thanks to Director Tracy Carter, our Technical Director Daryl Smith, and our Managing Director, as always, Diane Gow. I'm Ira Melman.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for listening to